Welcome to Commentary on Fire at the Podcast on Fire Network. And my name is Kenneth Olsen, and with me is my lovely new co-host. Stu is not fired, by the way, he's just not here. So we got in the room the first person who auditioned for us, and you've heard the audition tape for him. So Tom KW, Tom Kent Williams.
Hello, everyone.
Hey. And Hong Kong Dave, my favorite Hong Kong Dave.
Hi, yo.
And they're debuting on Commentary on Fire. This is the purpose, to get them on more shows than just Podcast on Fire. So this is the first network show, special show, if you will. And suitably enough, it's a Commentary on Fire. I don't know if that's easier or not. I think it's actually harder because we're actually working on a time limit here with the movie we're working on. 91 minutes of Undefeatable by Godfrey Hall Ho, Benny Ho, Ho Chi Mao, whatever you like. It's Godfrey Hall on the print that we're going to watch. The Undefeatable, starring Cynthia Rothrock, Don Niam, and John Miller. And as I'll explain in a little bit, Robin Shu is in this as well. But regardless, you can reach the Podcast on Fire Network at podcastonfire.com. And you can also register on the forum to interact with all of us at podcastonfire.com/forum, where also the extensive members-only archive is located. And this show will have a mighty, mighty big members-only extra. More on that in a second. We're on Facebook. Like us on Facebook and hit us up with some feedback if you like. facebook.com/POF Network. And our Twitter account is twitter.com/podcastonfire. My own site, where I do my writing of Category 3 Ninjas, Taiwan Black movies, old school Hong Kong horror. It's at sogoodreviews.com. All of that is video review. That's leesykvideo.com. And I also have my Twitter account, which is twitter.com/sogoodreviews. And you can also subscribe to the entire network on iTunes. So check out the iTunes feed that you'll find on the main site always, as well as in this show post. And you can also listen to us on Stitcher Radio at stitcher.com, where you can download that internet radio app to your computer and also to your smartphone, and add us to your favorite stations and listen to the network shows, all divided up conveniently for you, so you can listen to Commentary on Fire on the go. And we're gonna do a background information on Undefeatable, obviously, but once we start the commentary, and I'll try to get it out as soon as I can during the start, and otherwise you'll hear the background and also the tasty members only extra that's going to going up with this episode. But we're watching it on a DVD that's actually released in Germany, a PAL DVD, therefore a European DVD, because it's a cool DVD because it has both versions of the movie, the US version and the Hong Kong, or rather Asian version, on it, known as Bloody Mary Killer. And but there also was anyway a UK DVD that's available used, hopefully just for a few pounds. I'm not saying it's only worth a few pounds, but I don't think it was a Hong Kong Legend style deluxe edition that's actually worth £20. I think a normal price would be £5 to £10, and it's all worth it. You should pick that up. And for our US listeners, if you buy the US DVD, which is actually apparently from a rather good looking print, it's actually widescreen too, even though this is an open mat movie, so you don't lose anything in terms of the cropping. There is none. The US viewers obviously won't be able to be in sync with us, because that US DVD is in different speeds. But Undefeatable is finally available on DVD, which was a struggle at one point, but it's remained a cult classic over the years, and we're going to be deconstructing this as best we can. We're going to have fun. A mix of info and fun. And how could you not with this movie? So this leads us into the countdown. So Tom and Dave, are you ready to roll this sucker?
Yeah.
Let's go.
So, and as usual, it's on, when I say click, you all start the commentary, my co-host and you listeners, if you're listening to this with us. If you're looking at the YouTube edition of this, there's no problem to be in sync, because we've taken care of that for you. So let's go. 91 minutes of fun coming up. So the countdown shall commence. So 1, 2, 3, click. Background information before the fun starts here. This was essentially developed together with Honor and Glory, another Cynthia Rothrock movie by Godfrey Hall, as we see here. And this had Hong Kong investors on it, and executive producer Grandmaster Tai Yin wanted to make an American martial arts picture, essentially using scouted talent, but also named talent like Cynthia Rothrock to market the movie with, and merging it also with a Hong Kong style, a Hong Kong stunt crew, and thus Honor and Glory was born. Undefeatable was born the same year or the year after, and it's also a B-movie action that's merged with a vicious serial killer plot. So here you go, it's a Hong Kong style movie, kind of, and also a bona fide YouTube sensation because one of the fights is very famous from this movie, and it's a popular movie so many years after it was made. It's a cult classic, it has life, and it's due to its own energy present already in the movie, circa 1993. And it was also shot as a separate edit for the Asian market called Bloody Mary Killer that was dubbed into Cantonese. And we're gonna stop here. Here's a scene that actually is not in the Hong Kong cut. What you will find out as we talk about Undefeatable and Blood Mary Killer, Undefeatable, the US edit here, has this subplot with Don Niam's wife going to a psychologist and being very scared, you know, afraid for her life because her husband, the sweaty man,
yeah,
is abusive and engages in death matches. This is all cut from the Hong Kong version. None of this is left, only bare mentions of it, which is a shame because I don't know what you guys feel, but these actresses, not these guys, these actresses for psychologists, let's just look up the names here. It's a lot of cast to keep track of, but I really, it's Anna is played by, the wife is played by Emily Davachak, and the psychiatrist, Dr. Jennifer Simmons, is played by Donna Jason. I think they are the best actresses in this movie, actors.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I'd agree.
She's a fantastic crier, Emily, actually.
Mm.
And it's not a cry in the sense of, you know, she cries just, you know, a tear rolls down her cheek as, you know, she talks about this abusive life she has. And, you know, he abuses her as hard as he abuses people in the ring. So it's a very dark start to the movie.
Yeah, definitely helps to establish his character. But, you know, before you even see him in a scene, you know, other than the fight scene, it really helps sort of establish what kind of a guy he is.
Mm-hmm. And it's not like Cynthia Rothrock is first on screen in this version, you know. She's introduced like 10 minutes in, what have you. But apparently the opening fight that we only see bursts of was shot during a 13-hour stretch for Don Niam and the other actor. That was the first day, and, you know... already, you know, the legendary Don has tapped into intensity more than just fighting intensity.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And it's certainly affecting to see her cry over this. I mean, it's a, you know, domestic abuse is a, you know, a nasty thing in real life. And I think Godfrey is tapping into something, but he's tapping into cheesy, wonderful B-movie acting as well.
Yeah.
And we'll obviously talk of the various actors here, and we have the introduction of John Miller playing Inspector or Cop Nick DiMarco. And John is, you know, extensively interviewed by a Mike Fury, an interview you'll will actually link to, and we'll talk of John's career all throughout this commentary. I gotta say, by the way, that this... that whole opening fight scene and the opening with the psychologist is replaced in the Hong Kong version by Robin Shu's first scenes with Godfrey Ho, and then it cuts into this robbery scene. So that's all completely replaced with alternate footage, as you'll see in the members only section. You'll see all that alternate footage that is really.
Yeah, we have a few tearaways from a Judas Priest concert.
It's not every day you see a middle-aged gang member as well. So
dude, it was the 90s.
And still, Don's hair seems like it was stuck in the 80s, despite it. Godfrey insisted that Don Niam's hair was that long in the movie. And it's
immaculate.
It's actually absolutely spectacular. But before we go into Cynthia, I got to mention one thing about this scene. I like that I think it's odd that these are not underground fights. They are actually, organized alleyway fights, illegal alleyway fights. And these guys, the suits beside the suit, they're not very intimidating.
Not really.
I mean, and look at this guy with the chains all over him. You know, it's going to be a theme. The fighters that Cynthia is fighting, they have odd stylistic choices behind them, so to say.
Yeah.
Almost looks sci-fi in design, but this is obviously not sci-fi. It's the 90s. Look at the wonderful.
Or in like a ghetto S&M makeshift outfit. Which is what I always wear at street brawls myself.
It's like a weird kind of West Side Story or something.
But while we watched this fight, we want to start talking about Cynthia Rothrock a little bit before we go into something else, so go ahead.
Yeah, Cynthia was born in 8th of March 1957. She started training in martial arts at the relatively late age of 13. But, she displayed a natural gift, which ultimately led her to 5 black belts in different Korean and Chinese styles. And she's also 5-time world karate champion in forms and weapons from 81 to 85. So she certainly knew her stuff. And
speaking of knowing her stuff, I mean, I like the bursts of action in this movie. It's not extensive Hong Kong action, but I like some of the short, fast bursts that Cynthia responds very well to. In the scene with John Mill early in the robbery, there's some bursts as well that I like very much. They're not like boring American style martial arts action. They're actually
done well. Da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, it's done well as well. And some of the stuntmen take really hard hits later in the film.
Oh, absolutely. The Hong Kong stunt guy. So,
And
Cynthia responded to that very well. That was, by the way, the no retreat, no surrender moment where he says, don't touch the ground. It's like that, no retreat, no surrender.
Classy.
So, going back to Cynthia.
Yeah. 85 was the year which she made her film debut as well in 24 Hours to Midnight. And she began the Hong Kong chapter of her career with the Ko Yun directed Yes, Madam. And then in 86, she was busy in Hong Kong as well, made Millionaire's Express, directed by Sammo Hung and featuring just about everyone you could care to think of.
And she was not, by the way, just, the background Guaylo fighter. I mean, Cynthia was already respected.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, then, there was that. There was Right and Wrongs with Yun Bu and directed again by Corey Yun. And she had even worked with Wong Jing in The Magic Crystal.
Sweet film.
Yeah.
I would rather say I think she worked more with action director Tony Leung than
Wong Jing. Probably, yeah.
That's just my theory.
Yeah, it's her and Richard Norton in that one.
Yes. And Robot Andy Lau. Who does very well in the action department in Magic Crystal. Watch Magic Crystal for Cynthia and Richard, but definitely for Andy Lau.
As well.
Yeah, so go ahead, David. I think we still have time to do some more Cynthia when we're watching some of the worst actors here.
First notable film for her of the new decade of the 1990s was China O'Brien. Directed by Robert Klaus of Enter the Dragon fame. It's, pretty much considered the film that made her name internationally.
Is it actually a good film? If you guys have seen it, I haven't. I mean, I can see a breakthrough here.
Yeah, it definitely seemed like, there's a fairly well-mounted production. It had a good, a fair budget behind it. Mm-hmm. And it's the start of a huge decade. She made a total of about 30 films in the 90s. It was definitely the high watermark of her career. Mm-hmm. it made quite a few sequels. There was a couple of Shine O'Briens, you know, a couple of Fast Getaways, Martial Law, Raging Honor, but it's definitely the high time of her career for sure.
Including this one came during that time where she was a name. I mean, they could market her via this movie. That speaks to what she had achieved at that time. I like that John Mill is actually quite a mellow cop, just, you know, trying to help. He's got more instinct just to, you know, put her away, you know, nail her ass. But part of this interrogation, including where he looks at that wound that she has, you know, she says, I'm not into street fighting, I'm not doing that stuff. You know, and also the end of the interrogation where John or Nick DeMarco talks to his colleague that, you know, she's a good kid. That was also cut out of the Hong Kong version, so you lost some characterization that I actually like, which is a shame. But the Hong Kong version, as we'll talk about, didn't really favor keeping the good stuff. And going back to the Hong Kong version, by the way, what it was actually, again, it was called Bloody Mary Killer, dubbed entirely into Cantonese, changed the name of Don Niam's character essentially from Stingray to Devilfish, which is fun. But it all actually stars Robin Hsu of Mortal Kombat fame in exclusive scenes to that edit, along with actually Godfrey Ho himself, is actually in a supporting role. And it's shorter, but it has about 30 minutes of new scenes, and therefore a lot of stuff is edited out. And the main cast appears a little bit in these new scenes, including Cynthia. She has a rather training fight scene with Robin, but it's not a good edit. It evokes cut and paste, the cut and paste era that Godfrey Ho was very much a part of, but not in a good way. But we'll talk extensively of those scenes during the members only extra, where you see a Bloody Mary Killer, 30 minutes of it. But we'll also mention, as we go along, some of the stuff that was cut from Undefeatable, the superior edit of the two. But you can go back a little bit to Cynthia Rothrock, the tail end of her sort of career. What happened there?
Yeah, the beginning of the new millennium saw a third Tiger Claws film. But as career began to wind down, and as of right now, her last film is 2004's Sci Fighter, which also featured the genre notable Don the Dragon Wilson. These days she concentrates on a family life, public appearances, and teaching martial arts. Although there are rumours of further film roles and of a possible autobiography as well, which would actually make a good read, because in her career she's been in a lot of places, made a lot of movies, so I'm sure she's got a lot of stories to tell.
She met a lot of legends.
Yeah, would be nice to hear at some point. Read at some point.
So what do you think, Tom, essentially, of... What do you think of Cynthia, essentially? What's your general thought on her?
Most of her saw her in Martial Law 2, I think it was. Some straight video shit that she was on. But my first proper experience with her, I think, was Millionaire's Express. She's not exactly...
Oh, by the way, Tom, I've got to mention here, the tail end of the scenes between the sisters. It actually features a lot of, like, exposition, which is always hard for any movie. You know, they talk about, you got to have an education. No, I'll take a job. No, you got to have your education. It's more or less Christie, Cynthia's character, that isn't, hopeful for the future. And exposition is always hard, so I don't mind it. The Hong Kong version actually maintains the essence of this scene, but cuts out some of the playful moments between the sisters as we'll see here. So that's a good cut, you know, a minor cut.
Yeah, it could definitely get trimmed down slightly, this scene in particular.
Absolutely. But yeah, going back to Cynthia, when you first saw her?
Yeah, I first saw her in Millionaire's Express. She's not exactly a defining presence in that film, but, you know, she does all right in that.
Honey,
I think it must have been... Here he is.
You know, he seems... We'll go back to your impressions of Cynthia, because,
Don is on.
You know, he seems sweet enough when he enters. You know, like a physical guy. in love with his wife. You know, it's not too bad. I mean, who wouldn't? You know, oh my God, an animal! Oh, holy shit!
That towel is of no use. Stingray doesn't want to get sweat on his leather, but doesn't realize his hair is all the sponge he needs to soak it up.
And to be honest, I mean, this is, you know, as with like Ben in Red to Kill, you know, you can have fun with that, you know, rapist performance kind of. But yeah, in all honesty, I think Don, as fun as the performance is, and Don is, I think, is the first to recognize that, and the cast that was on this movie, it's actually rather fucking chilling. You know,
yeah, this
line here, come on, mommy, I want to play.
Yeah, you know, it's not exploitative. It's quite, you know, vicious, isn't it? And very uncomfortable.
It's definitely uncomfortable. I mean, look at the camera. It's lingering on the events here, you know. And it's not, you know, you might think initially that it's a sexual game between the two. But now, you know, the camera stays on. And it's not at all hard. Sorry, it's not easy to watch, rather. And, you know, the acting choices, you know, that are kind of over the top or rather intense, they enhance, you know, the chilling nature to this. And fuck me, she's so good. You know, playing the victim is not easy. It's not easy. And by the way, this was the second day of shooting. You know, 13-hour day first, and then a few hours of a rape scene. So, yeah, I've arrived. And, you know, it's obviously not fun to shoot this stuff. I've always wondered if, you know, a set is supposed to be tense during this, and or if they try to make it a bit more relaxed atmosphere. Like in Red to Kill, as we spoke of on Commentary on Fire. You know, if that set was tense, or if they needed it to be a bit more loose for everyone to get through the horrific stuff here.
Can work both ways, I suppose.
Yeah, I think maybe you need, for, you know, more sort of intense scenes like this, you might need to be a bit more sort of prepared and a bit more chilled, maybe. You know,
this aftermath here, where she's on the floor and he's having his dinner, that is not in the Hong Kong version. Most of the rape is, but this, which is even more horrible, to be honest.
I'm sorry, Stingray, but that steak is severely undercooked. You don't want to be eating that.
Well, Stingray doesn't cook his steaks.
He likes it raw. Yeah.
But look at her. She's so good in this. I mean, this is subtle. You know, just she's a catatonic shell, you know, and still the tears come.
Yeah, it's
her.
A shame she's not used more, to be honest, because she's really good in it.
And she's actually, you know, there's barely any mention of her leaving him in the Hong Kong version.
Yeah.
That is really unclear in the Hong Kong version. This is another scene that's not in the Hong Kong version, where he gets his money from the illegal fighting, illegal death match. So, you know, it's a shame that whoever supervised the edit of Blood and Mary Killer didn't realize the good stuff. Because it's, I'm sorry, Robin Shu can't draw the audiences in fully, in my opinion. So
he's not exactly charismatic, is he, really?
Good looking guy enough, but you know.
Yeah.
And I think we have time to go back to a little bit more about your history with Cynthia, Tom.
Yeah, I was saying, I think she's okay in Millionaire Express, but I think the film that really she stood out with was Right and Wrongs.
Oh,
where
right.
She, even though she did a lot of, you know, Yumbo did a lot of the stunts for her.
Oh, really? Could you spot that doubling?
You can spot it from a mile away. But yeah, she's good in it. And also, Police Assassins, a.k.a. Inspector Spurskirts. Yes, Madame. Yes, Madame.
I think it's Yes, Madame. Yeah,
Yes, Madame. Yeah. She's really good in that as well. You know, yeah, she gets a chance to really throw around in that. So, I think they're a best film.
I mean, it's unbelievable, really. To, knowing like Western actors in Hong Kong cinema, Cynthia got the respect to the extent that she was able to co-star in movies, properly co-star, and even star eventually in Blonde Fury. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's really admirable. It speaks to her, you know, dedication and strength that she could break through. She could gain the respect of stern and, you know, hard-ass action directors, because I don't think it's easy to work for Sammo. I mean, he requires a high standard. He requires you to take hits and all of that. And I'm sure Cynthia, when she was eventually treated as one of the guys, you know, she still had to take the hits, I'm sure. You know what I mean? But Corey used her very well in Right and Wrong. So, you know, part of that, you know, dark and nasty movie. And she, you know, spoilers, she dies a nasty death in that movie. Depending on the version you watch. So, you know, it's spoilers in a way, but not. There's two versions of that movie as well.
Yeah, yep. some of the Hong Kong work is, readily available here in the UK, but others not so much. I'm not sure the Right and Wrong's ever got a proper UK release.
Never got a UK release. No,
got used to
Dragon Dynasty released in the US, but never got a UK release, which is a shame because I think it would have sold pretty well when initial Hong Kong Legends boom was going.
Yeah.
It was released as Above the Law, by the way, in America, as the alternate title of the movie, but it was the Hong Kong version they released.
Yeah, so. I think that's the UK video title as well, Above the Law. It was released on video, but never DVD. Yeah.
So, we're flashing back to Don Niam's issues. You know, the abandonment issues, you know, Anna leaving him, you know, and that. You know, it's not deep psychology, but then again, if you really want to look at it closely, it's true for many people in this world that they can snap based on these kind of issues, you know?
Yeah.
And this was also, all of this, the flashback that occurs and all that, all gone from Hong Kong version. Nothing. I think Stingray's first scene is... Well, it's the rape scene, but he doesn't appear until the parking garage scene that we're going to see shortly.
That's the thing, by losing a lot of that, it does take away from the character. It's sort of, it takes some of the depth away, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he's the best thing about this film, no doubt. Yeah. I'd say.
He's dedicated. I you know, you laugh, you don't laugh at this, you laugh with it, but it's also chilling, you know what I mean? And the actors have explained in the interview we're going to reference that they had lots of fun doing this, and they're not ashamed at all because they know people appreciate it for what it is. You know what I mean? People are not, well, so I'm sure some people are laughing at it, but the majority of the people are definitely not. Despite this scene being funny when he sprays his hair with red, and you know what? I would have loved if it was white spray instead, so he could have had like a wolf look and shit like that. That would be so sweet.
Mrs. Frankenstein.
But this was also gone from the Hong Kong version. Not even this sweet scene. So, what are you going to do?
We've seen some recent pictures of Don Niam. He's
looking good, man.
He still looks pretty much like this. He's still really in terrific shape. For a guy who's got to be in his 50s, probably, I suppose. I think he just works as like a personal trainer and stuff. So.
Absolutely. Well, We'll start talking a little bit about him. He's a native of Akron, Ohio. He was a wrestler in high school, and there developed his kind of love for one-on-one sports. And that led him to starting attending a kung fu school at the age of 19. So he started rather later. And at 23, opened his own kung fu school in his hometown. And you might not think it when you're watching this acting, but Bruce Lee acted as an inspiration, as well as, you know, a philosophy present in the David Carradine Kung Fu TV series. But you know, we'll get back to that because I want to single out the story of Ricky moment, that I call it, and the Hong Kong stuntman moment in this scene. Because it's a neat little fight scene that is capped with, you know, another change in the movie's tone. You think there's a B-movie martial arts action going on here, but, you know, the change in movie's tone is going to serial killer territory, but it also goes into gore territory. And, you know, you got a wonderful Eagle's Claw moment coming up here that I still call a Story of Ricky moment because, you know what? You don't expect the eye gouging to happen.
No.
And look at that. There's a minor gore there. Oh, and there's the Hong Kong stamp. And dum, bum, 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 bum.
Bang. Took that then.
You know, and so it's trying out exploitation and... also, which I like, it's a Hong Kong style, you know, you get many things in one.
Multi-moods.
I love the multi-mood experience. But going back to Don, and the true change for him, according to the interview that Mike Fury conducted, was when he got blessed with being trained privately by Grandmaster Tai Yin, the executive producer of this movie, in the Southern Shaolin Hung Fu style. And you know, after training and all that, he also tapped into the fact that martial arts was hitting it big in movies and all of that. So Nam packed his bags and had a few thousand dollars in his pocket and headed to L.A. And his master's tie-in was at one time also in L.A., developing a project for a Hong Kong director to shoot. And this was the mention Honoring Glory with Cynthia Rothrock and John Miller, who's in this scene as well. And due to work commitments, because Nam did other stuff by the side when while trying to get his acting career going, he wasn't able to attempt to land a role in the project. But, you know, before getting Undefeatable, he talks about, and it's very upfront and nicely balanced this, about how hard the business was, how hard it is to break into the business, you know, and how the business can exploit you. For instance, he said his audition tape for a Ten Commandments spoof movie with Lou Ferrigno ended up in the movie. And a short role of a professor in a Concord Pictures project turned out to be part of an erotic series in France.
Wow.
It was not like he did a porn scene or anything. But in his own words, I didn't care. You know, move on. What are you going to do? You take the hit and move on. And he can actually be seen with the mentioned Don Dragon Wilson briefly in Out for Blood, but it was this movie that has put him on the map and, you know, has forever, you know, will remain on the map. You know, it's a classic movie and a classic performance, in my opinion. And his grandmaster, Tai Yin, was also developing Undefeatable with Godfrey Ho. And Don's demonstration for director Ho landed him the gig thanks to his physicality. I mean, he looks good today, looked good then. And he had good eyes, you know, intense eyes that the Ho responded to. And he has good skills with putting women in chains. At least the character does. You know. And, you know, bring in the wonderful red, you know, the intense red of a Hong Kong movie. Yeah,
where's that coming from?
Who cares? It's red, man. You know, it would be wonderful if it was blue. Oh, well, there's a little blue there as well. So the classic red and blue. And now the movie is trying out exploitation, an adults-only vibe, and doing it quite harshly. You know, it's not really fun, this. It's, you know, and it's gonna, this scene's gonna end on one piece of chain whipping.
Yeah.
It's fucking brutal, man, you know. And but this scene could have been even more brutal because I think it's this scene that Don referenced in the interview. Godfrey Ho wanted him to rape her in the chains, but he actually talked Godfrey out of doing yet another rape scene. And they came to the agreement that another wasn't needed. So, you know.
Might not like the character after that. If he'd had another rope scene, possibly.
Mm.
I'm glad he actually turned around and said, because I think you don't sympathise with the character really, but you kind of rooting for him, right? It might be me. But just the way he's just his presence and just the way you kind of, because you want to see him on screen, I think, is the most interesting part. So you kind of want to see more of him, what he's doing, even though his actions are terrible. But I think he's likable in some weird way.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
It's a stretch kind of to like make, you know, to when you say likable, like how the hell is he likable? But I guess you know. You know.
Yeah, his kind of presence and his persona and stuff, not what he does.
The discovery of the male body that they saw prior, that is missing in the Hong Kong version. He cuts straight to them discovering her in the porta potty here. Which is not a totally bad cut, but you know, I now we know the fact that he killed both, the guy who he threw out of the parking garage as well. And obviously we know he killed him because, or at least, you know, gouged his eyes out, or, you know, obviously. So going back a little to Nam while we try and not laugh at the extras and the football equipment that the main fighter is going to see here. Again, Don impressed Godfrey Ho with his physicality and his intense eyes, and you know, and Ho even encouraged the mullet to stay the way it was. Good on him. What a wonderful
choice.
Good call. And you know, he was nervous, Don, and as we said, he has 13 hours in the ring on the first day, second day a rape scene, but you know, hanging out with his past friend, his kung fu brother John Miller, and hanging out with Cynthia and admiring her skill, in particular. He admired her skill in picking up the choreography very quick. Again, she had a Hong Kong experience behind her at this point. that was really inspiring. And you know, via his stories, it truly felt like the movie was done the Hong Kong way, you know, very loosely, you know, changing on the spot, and you had to learn to sort of, you know, prep very quickly, just go out and perform and do it right quickly as well, you know. And it looks like the performers responded to this, you know, the Hong Kong way. And when you're low budget, when you're working with low budget as well, you don't have the luxury of doing 40 takes, you know, a la David Fincher or what have you, you know, just to get it right. So,
Lou always says no bricks at the end, Sky. Yeah. It's a random list of no-nos.
How is this helping him fight better or be more intimidating, you know, suiting up in his football equipment? I assume this is football equipment and not hockey equipment.
I think he is, yeah. Yeah, and Christy clearly hasn't a penchant for freestyle rhyme.
but look at her. She even reacts here, you know, what the fuck is this? So it's kind of, you know, she's reacting the way the audience would as well.
Mm.
You know, and all of this, as we're talking about it, and I hope you listeners pick up on this as well, we're picking apart this movie, we're critiquing it, but still finding it fun. And, you know, we're able to put forth praise in an uneven movie from scene to scene, and overall it, you know, deserves its praise. And
it works.
I always gather that you guys are that kind of way too, that, you know, a movie can come and go in terms of quality and still deliver overall.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely on the top end of her...
direction is great.
So bad. That acting is so bad. His missus' acting is terrible.
Especially, you know, the football player's a wife or girlfriend or cheerleader, what have you.
Oh,
he's wonderful.
So bad.
But I call it wonderful, though. I kind of do, because it gets me in the right mood. The movie doesn't stray from its mood, despite it being multi-mood. You know?
Yeah, it fits, to be fair to you.
But, you know, wouldn't you agree, David, it's a good mix of, you know, fun and praise, this movie as well, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah,
badness,
I mean...
Badness and praise, or whatever.
Yeah, it's, any, you know, throughout the film, it's never anything less than, you know, than fun and entertaining. There's never any sort of lulls. It always, you know, it whips along.
Oh, just, yeah, it's got to set the pace, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're continually delighted at the genre combo of B-movie, American martial arts, and the serial killer plot, and the Hong Kong style within all that. Actually, you know, having watched this movie fairly frequently lately because of the research, I mean, I don't... It's only the Hong Kong version that is boring and tedious. And I continually raise my eyebrows in this movie, and that's a sign kind of being genuinely surprised, and you're not always blessed with being genuinely surprised by movies, especially when you watch so much shit that I do, you
know? Yeah, it slightly reminds me of a film called Silent Rage, starring Chuck Norris. Mm-hmm. Which is it's the same mix of martial arts and like a murder plot going on, because I think it definitely takes bits and pieces from it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not bits and pieces like scenes for scenes, but it's definitely kind of the same vibe going on. You get a nice mix.
All of this, by the way, not in the Hong Kong version either. So, I mean, did they just sacrifice them, you know, Don Niam, quite a bit for Hong Kong version? I still loved him watching the Hong Kong version, which I did first. I didn't see Undefeatable until recently. But so it's a testament to the stuff that was there. It was great, you know. And but going back to Dom, you know, he fondly recalls working with the stunt crew. And living with Robin Hsu at the time, who was shooting his scenes for Bloody Mary Killer at the same time. But they didn't have any scenes together. And because of the movie's reputation by fans who greatly enjoys, as we talked about, the cheese and horrors of the acts in the film, you know, Niam is really fond of the fact that the movie turned out to be a sort of a cult classic over the years. And especially so since his, you know, it started to show when his scenes and the final fight scenes started to turn up on social media and YouTube and MySpace and Facebook. And you know, as a final tally on his bio, while we watch Don Miller's his demo, you know, he's got moves as well. Don logged some acting gigs on the likes of the LA Heat, the TV series, I believe, and tried to get projects off the ground, was a personal trainer, bodyguard, even managed a strip club at the time. But eventually, Niamh left LA and headed for home, and nowadays he's established as a personal trainer and has developed a fitness-based kickboxing and kung fu conditioning workout called Nitro Kick. And he's based today out of Las Vegas, and I will link to the Nitro Kick website in the show post to this commentary. You know, a staple of movies, the demo. Or, you know, it can come at the start of the movie, or, you know, in this case, it's kind of a foreshadowing that, you know, our cop has moves as well.
I love how this guy comes in and says, yeah, lad, you know, the martial arts is great and all, but stop fucking around, do some police work.
Yeah, but Mayor's riding my ass. It's that scene.
Yeah. It comes out all the usual stuff, like, you know.
Yeah.
Does he even say 48 hours at some point as well?
You're loose cannons!
The Hong Kong version cuts out the solo part of John Miller's demo and just cuts into when his partner has entered the room. Which, I don't know. Strange that Hong Kong movie couldn't bear having a martial arts demo in it, but whatever. And this scene as well, when he bumps into the girl who starts flirting with him, because he, you know, he's nice here.
Yeah, yeah, it's like a different side to him.
Yeah, and he is sweet, you know, absolutely. Yeah. Very, you know, a cunning character in that way, you know. And I would like to think that it's kind of Don's real side that shines through a little bit there. His real sweetness, you know. But... And I'm not saying, you know, it's possible that he's an asshole in real life. Obviously not.
Just, I don't want to ever go out with a steak with him.
So the Hong Kong version cuts into this, you know, his next scene. And I was clearly not paying attention. I missed that this was Karen, the sister.
Her hair's different from when we first saw her, I think. I didn't notice it at first.
Obviously, we only notice it when there's actually the scene in the morgue. In a little bit, but you know, I wasn't paying attention. Maybe Godfrey wasn't telegraphing good enough, you know. But
again, the stunt work is solid in this little scene.
We should touch upon Godfrey Ho a little bit. So why don't you go ahead and start that, Tom?
Okay, wait, where do we start? Godfrey himself, prolific director, born in 1948, and started his career in films in the early 70s. Shaw Brothers, mostly working as assistant director. Chang Che, alongside young John Woo. Ho's inspiration to direct came directly from working with the aforementioned Chang Che. His first project is what seems to be a French Hong Kong co-production entitled Paris Killers, a project he reportedly took over directing after his co-director couldn't handle it on his own. He met business partner Joseph Lai, legendary again, to begin learning how to sell his film, and a few years later, after Lai formed IFD Film and Arts, Godfrey joined the company to gain further knowledge about this aspect of films. Films involving Ho, the end of the 70s and early 80s in particular, involved a lot of Korean shot movies with Korean martial artist Tang Jung-li, which were mostly, I think, bits and pieces were shot by him.
Is that part of IFD's and ASO Asia's history that isn't really, really clear? They distributed a lot of already done Korean martial arts movies, but Ho has stated in an interview that they shot some stuff as well.
Yeah,
it's not of the cut and paste kind when they inserted, you know, a Richard Harrison into it. They were in Korea and shot movies like The Magnificent with Carter Wong and Chen Sing might be such case. But you also have a movie like Secret Ninja Roaring Tiger, which is an already done Korean movie with Wang Jiangli that they distributed IFT in that case. And Godfrey Ho got sole directing credit on that print. So it's always hard to like nail down exactly what Ho did and didn't. In my opinion, and I think he didn't do a whole lot of full movies at this time. Every now and again, as you alluded to, that some bits and pieces here and there.
Yeah,
but this period is when Joseph Lai and Thomas Tang were in company together before Thomas Tang formed Filmark, the other sort of rival company.
Yeah, Godfrey was actually the one suggested to Lai to produce films at IFD using foreigners, and it was here the legendary and distinct output from the company began, with Ho himself directing over 80
Holy
movies.
Holy shit!
Between 1980
and 1990. Let's stop here. I mean, the movie has now we get to see the fucking results of the eye gouging, and It's crazy how different this movie turns out to be after you look at the cover. Oh, it's Cynthia Rothrock. It's whoa, you know. And Cynthia gets to motor. It's not too bad in my opinion. You know, it's a it's a large reaction obviously, and why not? And I didn't feel this was forced.
It's fine.
Absolutely. But the thing is, what I would like to say is, cover her up for fuck's sake! Cover her up.
No, yeah, no.
Come on, let her go.
It's just torturing her now, aren't they?
Yeah. You know, they say it's not going to be nice or easy to watch this, you know. Just don't let her fucking watch this that much. Well, obviously she has to spot the eagle's claw marks and all of that, but for fuck's sake. Normally, if these proceedings are done correctly, they only like need to ID them for a few seconds, and that's fine.
You don't normally have Andy Warhol? As one of the guys in there as well.
Look, it's Street Fighter.
The
fighter design in this movie almost makes it seem like an 80s or 90s attempt, obviously, at sci-fi fighting movie, kind of. You know, you have gangs called the Eagles, the Maniacs, the Red Dragons. You know, and it's, man, but it adds to the fun, the good mad fun, you know. You know, what is cool, obviously, in the 90s is demoing on top of cardboard boxes and squashing apples or what have you. That is fucking hardcore.
If you listen to him as well, he sounds like he's actually trying to make his voice sound like a dubbed over VHS of the Kung Fu Club.
But, you know, we're going to be led into a little good concept fight, you know, on top of barrels. That connects to your age-old 70s martial arts movie where they fought on, you know, elevated stuff, you know, poles or what have you. So, you know, why not? And we got a mix of a Hong Kong stuntman taking nasty falls as well. So I really dug the mix that we occasionally see in this movie. And Cynthia isn't doubled all too much in this movie, and when she is actually well done. Not even fucking Corey Yun could double her, make sure the doubling job looked good, you know, in writing wrongs. In this movie, it looks good.
I never noticed it.
Yeah, there you go. So
never noticed it.
It's not in this scene necessarily. It's I think it's one of the next fight scenes where she does a twirl of some sort or one hell of an acrobatic move that apparently Cynthia wasn't as apt at. And then you have the Hong Kong stuntman obviously being quite acrobatic and crazy. But yeah, while we wait, let's continue on with Godfrey.
Yep, as I said, he directed over 80 films between 1980 and 1990, many of which tapped into the ninja craze at the time.
Yes.
Utilising, among other players, American actor Richard Harrison, who I'm sure, Ken, you don't know anything about.
Nope.
Initially filmed scenes for only a handful of movies, but was made a star of many more, thanks to How I Feel, split up and reused this footage.
Exploitation.
The Garfield phone footage pops up in several movies, but using uncredited and unauthorized music, but most importantly, various obscure Thai, Filipino, and Taiwanese crime and action pictures for their various ninja movies. He created an endless filmography of easily marketable, at that time, cut-and-paste cinema.
Classics like Ninja Terminator, Majestic Thunderbolt, and Inferno Thunderbolt, and what have you. So, good on you, Godfrey. You did good, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, in the notes here it says that Godfrey was involved with Filmark as well, the rival company, which I'm not doubting your research, Tom, but based on Godfrey Ho's own statement that he only used his English name, his Chinese name, Benny Ho, or Godfrey Hall, as in this movie, I don't think he actually did work at Filmark, because none of those movies turn up at Filmark. You have movies like Elton Jung, Edgar Jarre, Joe Livingstone being directors at Filmark. Those characters remain a mystery to this date, kind of. No one knows who they were. Maybe Thomas Tang himself. But having said that, the formula worked so well over at Filmark as well. They have classics like Robo Vampire and a lot of cool stuff. So Joseph Lai and Thomas Tang tapped into that cut-and-paste formula along with Godfrey Ho during the 80s. And, you know, credit to them. It was a good business model. It really was. It was entertaining, too. That's the main thing. But yeah, we can continue a little bit while we watch some interrogation. What else happened?
Well, speaking on Undefeatable itself, Godfrey mentioned that for Honor and Glory, his first film with Rothrock, filmmakers had Cynthia for only 1 week, a really tough schedule for anyone. For Undefeatable, Ho wanted to make, quotes, a whole movie, contract for a whole movie for 4 weeks of shooting with a bigger budget, but with the intention to sell video rights to the US market. To quote the man himself, Honor and Glory and Undefeatable made money because Cynthia Rothrock was so famous all around the world at that time. She's the only American girl who can fight so the people like her.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It, it seems so fitting. I didn't grow up, I did grow up in the 90s, but I weren't aware of her. So I didn't screen a lot of her movies at the time. But were you guys also into her American stuff, or are you into her American stuff other than Undefeatable?
I've seen a good deal of it, probably the most of it, in fact. But it's kind of a good while ago now in the sort of UK kind of video boom of the sort of 80s and 90s. I haven't seen so much of it in more recent times, but definitely then. I mean, you could go into any video store and there'd be a whole raft of Cynthia Rothrock movies, you know, up on the wall.
Did you guys see Honor and Glory?
I think I have, yeah.
It's also known as Angel the Kickboxer, so maybe you've seen it under that title, possibly.
I think we had it here as Honor and Glory, but it's been a while since I've seen any of her sort of more notable American productions. But I remember, you know, at the time, you know, when video was still a comparatively new thing, you know, I was watching sort of anything and everything, really, but. She was, you know, I'd seen that, you know, Charlie and O'Brien and stuff, and I'd watch those and thought, well, you know, there actually is something here. It's not just, you know, it's not just sort of a cheap nonsense. You know, she clearly knows the stuff. Mm. You know, they're sort of, you know, decent movies. They're not just sort of, you know, quick sort of cash-in things. You know, they're of a good standard, you know, for the genre. So.
I'm looking forward to watching Honor and Glory based on the work here. I think it sort of means a lot that it's headed by Godfrey as well and the Hong Kong crew.
Yeah, I think I'll check it out.
But yeah, you know, Godfrey, you know, in my opinion, he gets labeled as a bad director thanks to the ninja movies at IFDB. And you're either a fan of that fun, hokey cinema that they provided with the market with, or you're not, obviously. But I saw action energy in those. And, you know, obviously he was not sole action director, but he seemed to understand, you know, to inject energy in their own shot scenes that were cut into boat movies. And, you know, and sort of IFD and him had an understanding and detachment from the product. They know they weren't making art, but they were trying to provide the market with something they liked and could have fun with. And, it was really fun. And Ho's actual directorial creativity came during that Thunderbolt era, if you will, because Majestic Thunderbolt and Ninja Terminator to an extent as well feature some of the best of his directed scenes, you know, some thought out style for him, you know, not just boring point and shoot stuff. So I'm not surprised at all that Godfrey managed to do solid real movies after he left IFD, because, you know, the likes of Princess Madam I really like with Moon Lee and Sharon Young. Angel in Forces was another Girls with Guns movies he did, again Undefeatable that we're watching now, in a, you know, Deadly Target that I watched recently, a terrific Yukari Oshima gunplay movie, fantastic fun. So I think he was responsible for the action energy in a way, you know what I mean. The spinning movie that you just saw, that was a good doubling job. So if you didn't notice Tom,
good on
the stuntman. So, you know, I really like Godfrey in that regard. He remains underrated, in my opinion, and even at IFD.
Yeah, it would have been interesting to see, you know, if he'd have done more, you know, more kind of, you know, whole films, as has been said. It would be interesting to see him do, you know, do do kind of bigger sort of scale productions, or, you know, have more of a sort of a output. Outside of you know, like the IFD films, just you know, just to see what he could have done with it, you know, because he's certainly, you know, he's clearly got a lot of skill. So
absolutely, and But he stepped out of the movie business. So what's he doing now, Tom?
He was working at the Multimedia Innovation Center of the Polytechnic University. It's a bit of a mouthful. 5 years, and teaching the students there about filmmaking, directing, editing, lighting. And then I think the school was later integrated with the School of Design, and they wanted the lecturer to have a degree, which in Godfrey's case he didn't have. He couldn't teach there anymore, but he's joined the Hong Kong Film Academy, where he teaches academically. I think he's still there teaching. Right. There.
Yeah, I think so too, yeah.
Yeah.
The funeral scene was cut from the Hong Kong version as well. Again, as little mention of the sister, of Anna, of the, you know, Jennifer Simmons' character here, or the character of Jennifer Simmons. So, you know, they really didn't see the quality or think that this was quality that a Hong Kong audience or Asian audience could appreciate. But really, you know, Donna Jason, I think, she delivers as a natural delivery in terms of her dialogue and all of that. And not all actors throughout the movie actually achieve that level even, which is still good fun. But I think her and Emily Davachak playing Anna is you know, the standouts in the movie.
Definitely.
So it's a shame to lose all of that. That an actual earlier cut was also another kind of interrogation with John Miller here and Sinfer Rothrock. And after that, there's a scene where she explains all of that to her friends, exactly what happened in that scene. So Hong Kong version thought, you know, it's a dual scene. Let's cut the first scene and keep the meaning of what happened in the plot via her explaining what she talked with Nick DeMarco about. So, you know, not a bad cut. And why not include Eagle's Claw in this wild movie? You know,
and here's your Eagle Claw, Ken.
I like it. I'm more fan of it more than ever, thanks to this movie. Such good fun. But we'll talk a little bit about Nick DeMarco himself, played by John Miller. And again, Mike Fury interviewed him, and, you know, the actor provided a lot of valuable material. Very, you know, open. The actor's open to talk about this. He, to the left here, sitting next to Cynthia, by the way. We'll get back to the start of that. The various scenes here, there are two, I think, of them going to the house, different houses, to check for Eagle's Claw practitioners that might, you know, that might help narrow down who the killer is and all of that. So this was removed from the Hong Kong version. Also, you know, Nick DeMarco's partner goes to a house where he finds the person that is possibly sitting in a wheelchair. So that was also removed from the Hong Kong version. John Miller grew up in Maryland, where the mentioned Grandmaster Tai Yim, the executive producer, was based out of. And he was not blessed with having Kung Fu schools around him, so he had to settle initially for learning from books and magazines. But he said he was a determined kid and a young adult, and he quoted his mom as an inspiration. And it was through visiting various competitions that Miller got to witness Grandmaster Tai Yim students and decided to want to study under Tai Yim in the Southern Shaolin Hung Fu style, described as a blend of hard and soft that creates a uniquely balanced style that incorporates linear, circular, and a blend of hard and soft that... A blend of hard and soft that creates a uniquely balanced style that incorporates linear, circular, and angular techniques, resulting in movements that are powerful and explosive, yet precise and flowing, and without rigidity, I think. And thankfully, Tai Yim School was only a few miles from his own gym, so it was kind of destined to be, as he said. You know, and the devotion paid off, as in 2006, after nearly 25 years of training, Miller was named a ninth generation master of the Hung Fu system, along with six of his senior classmates, and they were the first Americans to be given this honorable status. So good on him during his fight scene here. Also drew inspiration from Bruce Lee, looked at the Kung Fu TV series that we mentioned as you know, a good philosophy and all of that, but Jackie Chan, Sammo Hung, you know, was, you know, obviously inspiring to watch. But and he progressed after winning the Weapons Grand Champions title at the North American Chinese Martial Arts Federation national tournaments held in Baltimore, and that resulted in him he got to act in a few dialogue and fight scenes that were to be shown to investors in Hong Kong, and that was the, you know, the prep for Honor and Glory. He actually played a redneck sheriff in the test footage, if you will, but he eventually got cast as the villain, Jason Slade, who wanted his hands on a deadly device for global domination purposes. Here's a fantastic line, by the way. You have the right to remain silent. So, what is it? You have the right to remain silent, so do me a favor and shut up.
Shut up.
And it's not as good as in the Hong Kong version, because the subtitle reads, freeze or I'll beat you.
Oh.
So, what a shame. So, Undefeatable wins again, you know what I mean? So, honoring... What's that?
Just saw some more pecked out eyes there.
Yeah. It never forgets that it's that it's a graphic movie as well, and I love it for it. That it's it mixes it all up. Before we continue on, John, let's mention Gerald Klein playing Mike here, his partner. He was also in Honor and Glory, by the way, and basically that's his only credits. But I like the energy he has about him. You know, he looks dopey. It's a kind of a dopey role. A dead role, rather, but you know, he makes sure to stand out during the few moments when he enters.
That was awesome. That high five was awesome.
And also, you know, he tries to flirt here with look at him, ladies. pretty lady.
That shirt and tie and leather jacket combo can have been worn in the 90s.
I wear it daily. Yeah, so all of this was also obviously cut from the Hong Kong cut, their corporation, the Jennifer Simmons and Nick DiMarco here, you know. And again, shame. I really like her. I like the female talent in this movie a whole lot. So, but what you gonna do when apparently Robin Hsu is deemed to be a better draw in Hong Kong? And maybe it was. I don't know. But going back to John Miller, finishing up a little bit more on him, you know, he changed sides obviously for Undefeatable, playing a cop, contrasted against Cynthia Rothrock's bad girl character, and contrasted against the over-the-top craziness of Kung Fu brother Don Nia. They actually, had the same grandmaster, obviously. So, and Miller recalls fondly the Hong Kong stunt crew, you know, and quoting them as certifiably crazy. And learned a powerful lesson in terms of working on a low-budget movie also, you know, to be adaptable and get it right. You know, you don't have much prep time, just do it. And subsequently worked on the TV series Homicide, but career never took off either. And the East Coast-based family life he was working out of LA meant, you know, he was not able to be with them as much as he liked, you know, as being a father and a husband. So he's left LA by this point, and he continued to be a provider for his close ones, and he's actively training. He's the vice president of the United States Shaolin Hung Foot Kung Fu Federation, and acting is sort of out of the question and for the future, but he's also pursued a music career in the form of what I think was a band called the Country Doctor Band. So, you know, he's doing stuff as well, and having a good attitude about things, and seems you know, quite natural. I think it would be fun to see how he fared in Honor and Glory as a bad guy. So eventually I'll see that. I think it's on a German DVD as well, and probably available elsewhere to some extent.
Yeah, I think I've got that here. I have to give it a look up on Amazon or something. See how easy it is to get hold of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's again, there's a lot of focus here on the Jennifer Simmons character, and you know, having all that removed in favor of Robin is a bit of a mystery. I'm not so glad that, you know, it's an example this of having alternatives, you know. Thankfully, you know. And there's a serious kind of slip here. It seems, anyway, a serious slip to send mail from the psychiatrist's office to the household. You know, and
yeah.
Because the danger inherit the danger of the situation. You know, they know that he's an extremely abusive husband. So it seems like a very serious bureaucracy slip to send the mail to the house. But what do I know? Maybe there's some logic. Obviously, the movie wouldn't progress without him finding out where the doctor is, you know. But how are you in terms of that? Can you let go of such, you know, if we, let's say, deem this a glaring error, how are you in terms of letting go of that stuff? What do you think, David?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a super serious film. So, you know, there's a couple of little moments where you think, ooh, you know, it doesn't quite add up. It doesn't spoil it in any way, really. You know, it's, you can kind of you know, suspend your disbelief and, you know, just sort of carry on with the sort of overall kind of experience of watching the film.
Yeah, that's a good attitude to have. Absolutely. How has your experience been with IFD movies, you know, going back to Godfrey Ho and cut and paste movies? Have you even seen a lot of that stuff? What about you, Tom?
I've seen a couple. I've seen, I think, Ninja the Sector.
Uh-huh.
I can definitely, you know, commend
Do check your connection a little bit there, Tom. I think we're losing you a little bit. While we continue on the commentary, this is very live, listeners, so don't mind us. So the scene actually here, the Hong Kong version cuts, you know, basically right into this scene. So there's no background to the fact that they've been cooperating, you know, John DeMarco and Jennifer Simmons. So we just see this scene, and there's so few mentions in the subtitles of, again, the Anna backstory, what led to this, what danger Stingray is actually, you know, does have. So, you know, it's it seems so lacking. You know, what did you think when you watched the Hong Kong version, David? Did you react harshly to that? That where is everything?
Yeah, it took so much out of the other side of the storyline. It was it's just really, really odd. And what the effect it has on the, you know, Don Nam's character in the film is, you know, he's kind of stalking and, you know, going after these other women. Is it makes it look even more odd than it is in the US version. It just looks really quite sort of peculiar, you know, because there's no kind of, there's less kind of, you know, explanation and behind that, he just kind of appears and starts doing it. It's sort of it strikes quite an odd note, you know. It, you know, without a bit more behind it, it just looks very strange.
This is essentially the first scene in the Hong Kong version where we find out, I think anyway, there's any reference to, you know, the name of Don Niam's character, and in the Hong Kong version, obviously, it's Devilfish. and that's been mentioned like multiple times and all of that. So you know, we'll obviously talk more about the Hong Kong version, but it is a peculiar thing that it changes so much. Thinks its stiff scenes are way better. Here, by the way, on the red background, it's a classic line: "I've been busy." Against a fucking large ass red background, you know. And that delivery is classy because he's holding his sword as well. So, wow. And I think, you know, this was essentially the first scene in the Hong Kong version with between this character of Lou and Don. They barely had any scenes, because the subsequent scene coming up here is also very shortened in the Hong Kong version. You know, there's barely any dialogue between Stingray and Lou when he discovers the eyeballs and the body and all of that. So
yeah, Yeah, I've just looked up Honor and Glory. It's available here quite readily. It looks to be about £4-5 brand new. So that's not bad.
Yeah, bargain being isn't necessarily a bad fate for the movie. If you find it in one such, you know. And bargain bin is designed as finding gems as well, you know. So, you know, you find IFD movies in bargain bins over in the UK. The various Hollywood DVD releases.
That's where I found mine.
Yeah, Secret Ninja Roaring Tiger and a double bill of Golden Ninja Warrior and Ninja Terminator and all of that. By the way, that's exactly how you say Golden Ninja Warrior. Golden Ninja Warrior! And in no other way. But, you know, going back to that delivery on the red background by Don, I've been busy. You talk about sickening and what we already know, but kind of Godfrey delights in that fact, you know. By the way, if you forgot he was the bad guy, look at this line of dialogue, you know, against the red background. It's kind of funny and frightening at the same time. And I really dig Don's presence in terms of that, you know. And here's the fucking, you know, where are we, in 7 all of a sudden, you know, discovering, you know, graphic shit like this, you know. It's not cheesy, this. It's, you know, it's disgusting. And when he picks up the eyeballs and, you know, pokes in them a little bit, you know, not, look at this, you know, what is this? You know, ugh. It's kind of disgusting. And I have a high tolerance for gore and all of that, so, you know. But having said that, in terms of the cut that comes here, where there's a whole bunch of you know, dialogue between Dom and Lou that is taken out of the Hong Kong version, that is actually quite an effective cut, because it goes from the discovery essentially of the body to him murdering this character. So, you know, no extensive dialogue needed, just, you know, murder him. But then again, you have what is left here in Undefeatable is good, though, because it's kind of frightening to be in that position, you know what I mean, of a character like him, you know, trying to talk himself out of this predicament. So that offers up an alternative chain of events that I rather like. So what do you guys think about those two, those two different contents of the scene?
Well, together.
Yeah, I mean it's a fairly unusual film for that. I mean, there's not a whole load of US martial arts films that sort of mix different kinds of stories together, you know, in the same way that this film does at all. I mean, I couldn't name anything else that sort of...
And this also allows this to go on, you know what I mean? It's not a minor tangent to the film. You know, this scene, obviously, you know, is, you know, when it gets worked up, you know, that's in the film, all of it, you know? It seems like they just let Don... And this is essentially, you know, what the Hong Kong version cut to, you know, the murder and the eyeballs in the tank. And him looking very pleased. Which is a wonderful expression.
You know. We'll have to buy fish food for a week now.
But, you know, it's they indulge in the sides that the movie has, you know, including this, which is wonderful to have.
It's a strange juxtaposition of Donnie with the guy behind wearing, like, a jumper and jeans. And he's in this like flowery top with a gun and a badge, his badge, his belt.
I say, why not?
He looks like he's straight from the gym.
It's actually finding Lou's body and this talk of you know, the investigation and the various theories about where's this warehouse, where is Stingray, who is Stingray, that was cut as well from the Hong Kong version, so you didn't see the discovery essentially and no dialogue. And as well as this, you know, Jennifer's dialogue with Nick over the phone, because, you know, as soon as they started cutting all the details about you know, Stingray's real name is Paul, by the way, the character, and when they started cutting all of their story out, obviously everything subsequently went as well, including this. So, you know, once they started, they couldn't stop. You had to follow that through. And I don't know. At times it feels in the Hong Kong version like they desperately padded out. You know, there's a repetition of scenes and just stiff staging and bad karaoke and shit like that. So, but the Hong Kong version has its minor share of fun. So, and even, you know, coming up to this, one of my favorite scenes in the movie with her trying to manipulate him, and despite being caught and trying, he plays his mom here. She tries to play his wife and all of that. You know, all of that was cut as well. So what the Hong Kong version cuts into, unfortunately, is her in the chains already, and they try to cover it up, the fact that all of this plot is lost. You know, why he's smelling her is because she's wearing Anna's favorite perfume, or his favorite perfume. So, but what the Hong Kong version covers it all up with is simply like a subtitle that simply says, you know, why did you make Anna leave me? And there's no madness left anymore. I know she's very game as well, you know, very intense.
It's first shapes as well.
Yeah, I was wondering, since she's in Honor and Glory, if she's, you know, it seems like she has some martial arts background, and this was kind of, you know, almost a full-on acting role, so to say. But I think she does very, very well. Again, Donna Jason, the only, no other credits on IMDb other than in these two American Hong Kong productions. So hopefully she's doing well. that you can say as well. But yeah, you know, in terms of standout scenes, other than the, you know, the expected one towards the very end, what scenes do you think stand out really in your mind that you tend to remember? If it's not this scene, as a matter of fact, what do you think, Dave?
What, for her or for the whole?
Well, for the whole movie.
Anything we've done near a minute, really. Definitely the central character. You know, without him, you know, and his sort of performance in the film, it'd be a very different kind of film. He definitely is sort of the top, top element of it. So he always
check him out here in particular when he's taken down. You know, okay, mommy, I'm sorry, mommy, and he's not like, you know, crying or anything. You know, I'm sorry, mommy. It's you know, he's focused.
Yeah.
Okay, mom, I'm following you, mom. We don't have any food, mom. I'll take care of that. And again, the cut from him abducting her in the office goes straight to her in the chains. If you can imagine that, listeners, it's you lose a whole lot in between. You know, which is a shame.
I
was just gonna say, you can tell from, you know, having seen both cuts, for me at least, I think you can definitely see that the filmmakers' hearts were in this version, and the Hong Kong version is kind of, it feels like something they had to do, I guess, because of the funding, rather than something they wanted to do, or, you know, something they chose to do. It seemed like they had to. It's contractual, or, you know, that, to adapt it for the sort of the Asian market. But it's
definitely it's just so empty.
Yeah.
And stiff and poorly staged and all of that. So it has its fun, because it's fun to see, kind of, though, a movie with almost all Westerners in it, really badly dubbed into Cantonese, and see the subtitles change sort of the names, or approximating the names. I think you know, Dr. Simmons here is referred to like Dr. Sesu in the subtitles, the English one, S-E-S-O. I think that is something akin to that.
Yeah, I
think so, yeah.
Dr. Sato or something. It's clearly not in the least bit Asian, but it's a good sensation there.
But still fairly good fun. It's a lot more boring, since I don't understand Cantonese, to listen to it in Cantonese rather than in English. But it has its share of fun, because, and the most of the fun comes from the fact, as I mentioned, that it's an alternative, and it's kind of fascinating to put your head into why there was an alternative, and think of how that worked from a business standpoint, and why it was created, as we just talked about. You know, I've always liked that, the kind of film nerd in me comes out during those moments, you know what I mean?
Me too. It's always interesting to see different cuts of certain films. Definitely. Or certain territories' cuts. Always interesting to see. As well, we have sometimes time of Hong Kong films, it always turns out to be quite interesting.
Leading up to the ending here, you know, many, you know, we have a fight scene in between as well. But watching Undefeatable for the first time, you know, do you remember watching it for the first time, or did you actually watch it for the first time recently, David?
I'm pretty sure I've seen it before, but it was a long, you know, this is when it, you know, it got its early, you know, its first ever UK, you know, video distribution, because there's scenes in this that are really strongly familiar. But you know, watching it again recently, it felt almost like the, you know, watching it for the first time. It's only seeing it again subsequently that I think actually, you know, I'm, you know, got sort of recollections of having seen this like a good while ago, and certainly, you know, the video cover here seems really familiar, so I think I probably did, but you know, this is back almost when it came out, so like nearly 20 years ago. So, you know, watching it again is like, it's almost, it's like a fresh, it's like, you know, watching it fresh, you know, and it's good, it's really good fun. It doesn't slow down, it doesn't sort of You know, Godfrey Ho knew how to keep the pace. He kept it going. He didn't let it sort of, you know, slack off, or you know, he knew what he was doing. So, you know, and you know, everyone, you know, everyone sort of really gives it their all, and you know, and it captures that, and it shows on screen. So,
and they seem to respond to the action as well, you know. Some of it is a little bit stiff, but most of it flows very well. And in particular, I like these smaller bursts of fast action. But this is all good fun, because here you have a broader mixture of, you know, Hong Kong stuntmen, Cynthia, but also, you know, weapons, bottles, you know, props, really, you know, which is used well. You know, there's some good usage of slow motion, actually, you know, for select moments. Otherwise, slow motion can be a really, you know, trek to get through, because it's used so damn much. But you know, it's a, you know, why not pour it on? You know, why not make it? You had so much fun. You've been so outrageous. Why just pour it on, man? Show America something else. You know.
Yeah, the use of the props and the, you know, the weapons and, you know, the little bits and bobs that are having to be sort of, you know, lying about in, you know, in the room, that's you know, that's a very very Hong Kong thing. Mm-hmm. And
this is an iconic shot of Dawn, by the way. I love that
they do that really well here, and you know, just sort of, you know, making use of what's there, and you know, making it flow, just making it seem like, you know, that's, you know, entirely natural.
And I mean, I don't have much experience with American martial arts, but you always hear that, you know, normally the shooting style was, you know, a big master and then cut it up into different pieces. But you know, this movie being more Hong Kong style is obviously way different. They shoot, you know, don't shoot the scene in the master, and Cynthia was used to it, but I think you know, the other actors respond to that quite nicely, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sure.
And it's just a moment just for the sake of it, you know.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, you know, tracks back to to good old Hong Kong, good old Hong Kong style, you know, stylistic shot just for the sake of it. Whether it's in that case snow or what have you, or so you know, it's one of those why not moments, and you know, the whole ending is a kind of why not.
Yeah, I think the film itself just feels like a Hong Kong film directed by a Hong Kong director, just starring Western actors instead of Hong Kong actors.
And that isn't automatically, you know, a recipe that is successful on papers. I mean, it's well scouted too and well cast in that regard. They had performers that could respond fairly well to what was required of them, because you don't have a lot of, you know, doubling of the male actors, you know, just because they couldn't do what was required of them. You know, on the contrary, that they it plays to their strengths probably. But whenever you see, you know, Don and John, it's not like the movie reverts to a more stiff American style martial arts movie that of the, you know, of the worst kind. It still maintains a flow, and it still is, you know, part of the same movie. You know, it has a good pace and a good through line, if you will.
Yeah.
I've never taken out of the movie, to be honest, whether it's, you know, for storytelling purposes or action purposes. It's you know, when you have fun with the movie and deconstruct it, that's not akin to be taken out of the movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, you know, it's built its audience, and, you know, and it's built its, you know, appreciation, you know, over the years. I mean, because it has something that, you know, other, you know, American martial arts films of the same era, you know, the early 90s, it's got its own flavors, its own style, and that's, you know, that's sort of a, it's got a sort of a unique quality, and that's, you know, and it's endured, you know, so you know,
yes, it's coming up on its 20th anniversary in about 2 years.
Yeah, people are still watching it today, still talking about it today, because it's it's got something that you know,
you always wonder how villains sneak into hospitals all the time. but again, why not?
Yeah.
And there's a rather chilling shot come up here when they discover the cop has been murdered because he lies on the floor twitching. When Cynthia and Don John are running into the room here, you know, not the glasses shot obviously, but you know, the twitching shot there. You know, I don't know, I found it rather chilling, you know, almost dead. And we also get the sort of two climaxes to the movie, which is cool. You know, because think like, oh, Cynthia's got the big final fight here. And obviously it makes sense, of course, because you've set up that there's multiple, you know, good physical specimens in this movie, if you will, and everyone's going to get their chance to shine. But, you know, you would almost think that the elaborate fight with Cynthia and Don would be the end, but no.
Shirts are off, one-on-one.
Yeah. Shit's on and shirts off.
The baby oil comes out.
Hey guy, do you remember Cobra? Is that, you know, the same style of knife that Brian Thompson had in Cobra?
It looks exactly the same.
It is, yes.
Exactly the same.
That's the sole thing I remember from Cobra nowadays. I haven't seen that in, you know, ages, but
I saw that recently, actually.
Uh-huh. Okay, you need a rewatch.
Yeah, it was good fun. I liked it then, but it's not like I've never owned it since VHS days are bad. I don't even have a copy of it. I watched a friend's copy of it way back when. Should be good fun. I always remember Brian Thompson, and he was also in the X-Files later on. I was like, Brian, he's a good big presence. You know, maybe Brian would have looked good in a Godfrey Ho movie. Who knows? You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, there's not a whole lot of sense here. But, you know, why not? You know, think less sense. Just go with, you know, intensive fighters making essentially animal sounds while fighting each other. You know, and taking off their shirts just because. But it's not like they are totally ripped to shreds, these shirts. But, you know, it's kind of an internal logic that isn't logic, that I just absolutely adore. It's what... look at him quivering as well when he does that.
Yeah.
I'm tasting sickness, essentially. Lack of hygiene. Look, oh my god, it's wonderful. I mean, if you're listening, Dom, you know, bless you, and if you're listening, John, you know, bless you. You're on board with the intelligence of the movie, because there is an intelligence in this movie, as we've alluded to during the commentary. It sets out to do, you know, it knows what it sets out to do, it wants to do, and it manages to do it. You know what I mean? Execute it and then some. I mean, it's not like this was pre-planned. This wasn't written in the script. You know, apparently it's just said, you know, final fight in the script. And they worked this out kind of on the spot, you know, not with a, you know, large, huge prep as such. You know, there's elements later in this scene that were thought of on the spot. We're going to reference that when we come to the scene. But, you know, when you look up Undefeatable on YouTube, this is one of the first hits.
Yep.
Named like best fight scene of all time.
And, I would agree with.
I mean, it's actually good. You know, it's brutal, it's rough, it's gritty, and it's outrageous. Yeah. It's wildly funny as well. And, you know, it's just a pitch-perfect balance. I mean, it's damn good, mad fun. And who wouldn't want damn good, mad fun? You know, we may have a little bit of drama here and there in the film, but the movie is, you know, summarized as that. You know, you don't even need to do a review of it or a commentary on it, because it can be summarized in that way as well. You know, damn good, mad fun.
Yeah.
And it's a very good way. He obscures the makeup very well, Don. Because they probably couldn't do that makeup in when he moved. Maybe it would have fallen off, you know what I mean? The prosthetic. So it times it very well, you know, hits his mark, if you will. Which is not an easy thing to do. Hitting your mark, it's a... You know, you need to be in focus and all of that when you... so you can't, you know, overstep your mark and all of that. So I'm not sure how long it is, so we might as well mention it right now. John actually said that the Stingray's comeuppance coming up right here, the logical comeuppance, Jesus, was not how it was meant to end. He was supposed to kind of fall down some stairs and trip over his knife, but they saw this contraption, you know, they're actually in a laundry sort of room in a hospital, and this is what they come up with, and it makes so much sense. And it has wonderful, you know, lines, keep an eye out or whatever it's just said. And John improvised a wonderful line that's kind of shit but still great: see ya. But you know, it's great, it's absolutely great, and I'm glad they came up with this, because it makes 100% sense to end it in that gruesome manner.
Yeah.
But also, you know, he gets his eyes poked out, gouged out. And it's not like it ends with him just rising in the air. He actually gets, you know, he goes down the line, if you will. And I think that's the wonderful part of the scene.
Totally.
But, you know, summarizing it, we have, by the way, a yay freeze frame ending, almost a typical Hong Kong ending. Yay! But summarizing my thoughts on the film, I'm incredibly fond of the film, and I think it accomplishes what it sets out to do with a Hong Kong style to boot, including introducing the serial killer plot, something you didn't expect, you know, Hong Kong style. Godfrey Ho, I'm trying as best as I can to, you know, lift out of the bad rep he got directing Ninja Footage at IFD, and his own films post IFD, including this one, are very much good. You know, Princess Madam, Deadly Target, and this, and it's a movie that is incredibly intelligent about what he wants to do, and that's not easy to pull off. And it takes the combined efforts of the cast and crew to make this very special. And I've said it a lot, and I've said it again: it's good, mad fun, and a movie that genuinely deserves praise in my opinion, because of all that I mentioned. It's not so bad that it's good. It's actually very good when you examine it really closely.
Yeah. So my keys too high.
Yay!
Yay! That should have ended with a freeze frame of Cynthia just going, "You guys."
But final thoughts, Dave?
Yeah, I think it's got to be up there as one of the most successful, if not the most successful, sort of a hybrid of the American sort of martial arts with and the Hong Kong style. It sort of, it works. You know, sometimes that works. What was that Ronnie Yu movie, The Big Hit, the American movie he made?
Yes.
Mark Wahlberg.
Oh, you mean Kirk Wong directed that?
Yeah, Kirk Wong, that's it. That was sort of, now and again, it kind of got going, it kind of worked, but it was patchy. But this, consistently, from the beginning to the end, it's it works, it delivers, and that's the ideal, it does what it set out to do, it does what the filmmakers set out to do. So,
What about you, Tom? Final thoughts.
One of the most entertaining films, I think of it. I mean, solid, if not amazing. Completely solid throughout. Hilarious dialogue. Slightly cheesy, but just a damn good time.
Very good. And by the way, listeners, thank you very much for listening. We'll see you during the Members Only. We're going to talk about Bloody Mary Killer now. So thank you, Rudd, for listening.
See you.
Bye.